Now, I'm going to do one more for fun right before lunch, so you won't think I'm crazy. Or if you think I'm crazy, you can go off and eat lunch, and it will be all right. And I want to talk about church on the net. There's no way to avoid that conversation. One of the forms of what is happening, one of the changes that's happening, and emergents are, by and large, many of them drawn to it, is cyber church. I don't know how many of you have ever fooled with Second Life or Utopia or any of those. If you haven't and you're in active ministry, you probably need to go look. Barner Research Associates is probably the most reputable of the religious demographers in this country. I certainly find Barner's data to be the most predictable. Dr. Gallup, as you know, is no longer with the Gallup Institute, but he's working now for himself. But very often, many demographers find what they went looking for. They have a premise, and they go looking for it. Barna and his group seem to me to just ask questions that are as neutral as possible. And therefore, I find his data usable in that way. And Mr. Barna said, or Dr. Barna, says that sometime by the end of this year, over 20 million of our fellow Americans will be having their whole worship experience on the net. They will never enter bricks and mortar. It will all be on the net. That number also will grow. Many of them will be emergence Christians, and many of those sites will be emergence Christian sites. They already are. By the end of when? By the end of this year.
This year.
By coming of 10.
20 million?
20 million. Slightly over, he says. Meaning that he doesn't know exactly. He's very cautious. When he says slightly over, you're probably going to hit 22 or 23 million, but he can't prove it. But he's very cautious in what he says. That's a lot of people. If you've not gone to Second Life and looked, it's complicated to get in. It's a pain in the neck, actually, to get in unless you want to take a shortcut. And there is a thing called www.episcopalcafe.org, all one word, episcopalcafe.org, where you can get in without having to register. I don't know why the Episcopal Church has got a back door to the thing, but whatever. If you want, and I would hope that every one of you would go look.
What was that address again?
It's www.episcopalcafe.org, and it's because it's run by the Diocese of Washington, who has an unusually gifted journalist in its head of its public relations named Jim Naughton. And Jim Naughton is so aware of what's happening here that he's done consistently pushed awareness of Second Life and of cyber church, and he made this shortcut so you can go in through that. You won't be able to play, but you'll be there. That is to say, you won't have an avatar. Second Life is, and there are a number of others, but it's the one that's probably best known, is a virtual world. That is to say, it's got everything that this world has. It was a game, and has grown far beyond that. Since I'm talking Episcopal, I can tell you that the Cathedral of the Isle of Epiphany is owned by the Anglican Church. It was opened in May. The Anglican Church bought an island in virtual reality, and we have built a cathedral. It was opened in May. It now has over 800 congregants. It has 5 services a Sunday. Its dean, the priest in charge, was Mark Brown, who in real life is executive director of the Bible Society in the New Zealand Bible Society in New Zealand. In terms of hierarchy, the cathedral on the Isle of the Epiphany is overseen by the Bishop of Guildford in the UK. One of the clergy is a female in this country. One is from Germany, and one I think is also from the UK. There are 5 clergy. Father Brown, Dean Brown, whatever you want to call him, just left his responsibility for running the cathedral in order to begin to open up Asian services as part of the offering in the cathedral. He will be working on Asian language services. There are also, in addition to the five Sunday services, there are two weeknight study groups and one Wednesday night prayer service. They are attended by avatars. That is to say, citizens of, I wish you all could see your faces. You're so fascinated. You have to hear this whether you want to or not. Damn it. Because this is part of where the church is going. This is part of emergence. An avatar is, if you actually go to the trouble of joining Second Life, an avatar is your mouse gone human. That's exactly what it is. It's instead of seeing that little arrow that is your mouse, you can choose to be a boy or a girl according to what you are or not, or according to what you wish to present as you are. One of the problems here is there's no real honesty. There's no vetting to be sure you're telling the truth. And my avatar, as a matter of fact, wears a halter that I would die to be able to wear, and huge hoop earrings, because I always wanted to wear those and never could. And so, by jingo, I've got it. Grace, your rainmaker, hasn't, and so be it. The avatar can do all of the things that you do in real life. You work on Linden dollars, and you get 200 Linden dollars to an American regular dollar. And you buy and sell, and you get your groceries, and you pay your rent, and you own property, and you can drive a car, and you can contribute to the church. You can do any of those things that you want to, because it's absolutely the same thing. It's an alternative life. This is part of why your son says, well, that was where my mind went immediately. I just didn't want to go there. I really do like to do this right before a break, because it is so that I want you to get over the shock before I have to deal with you again. So, but this is part of why it says we're going to be irrelevant. And so you do all of these things. Now, before you go laughing at that and saying it's a game, in two venues in this country right now, in two legal venues, there are two divorce cases hanging, and they've been hanging now for almost 18 months. They're hanging because the mate in real life is suing the other mate, who is living more than 12 hours in both cases in virtual reality, for alienation of affection, because he or she has indeed married in Second Life a different mate and is spending more time there. Now, you can regard that as sad or bizarre, which is what I regard it as, or you can face the fact that those suits are hung because the judge cannot rule either direction. If he denies the fact that that's even possible and says no, clearly not, the IRS is on his tail. If he says it is absolutely true that there's alienation of affection, he has just made Second Life a legal domain in which laws apply. And the reason the IRS is going to be on his tail is that last year, 12 of our fellow Americans made over $1 million in real dollars dealing in Linden dollars, buying and selling in Second Life. Okay?
Wow. Say what?
How did they do it?
Well, they bought up property cheap and sold it as the neighborhood got good. I never went to a mosque in my life because I'm a woman, but Gracia has gone just to see what the boys do in there, because there was nobody to stop me. In the Episcopal Church, which is the one, again, I know best, there was a huge discussion among our clergy and bishops, and then it dropped quickly because it was too hot a potato. But summer before last, there was when we were first talking about the cathedral, the question is, can you absolve? The UCC has spent more money than any other communion, I should start there, in Second Life. They own the island of Koinonia. And they have a huge installation. So UCC was the first, very often they've been cutting edge on a lot of this, to buy a lot of property. Well, they bought it from somebody who had already owned it, you see, and who sold it at a profit. Just everything there, it's a parallel universe. Yeah, it stretches your mind, on the Isle of Koinonia, there are even hired police now, who have hired guards, just as there are in some of our regular churches who go around patrolling to keep.
This isn't Shirley MacLaine.
This is not Shirley MacLaine. Wish that it were, because this is serious theology. All right.
Whoa.
So the question first rose was, can you indeed absolve? Can an avatar confess sins to an avatar priest and be absolved by the avatar? Given the fact that there's absolutely no way to know whether the truth is there or not, it's a question. But if the sin confessed has repercussions, like, for instance, murder, does priestly impunity still, or clerical impunity still accrue? You hear what I'm saying? Am I being clear? This, after you get over the bizarreness, you need to hear what I'm saying.
Well, it depends if you're confessing things. I mean, it seems like what you're really talking about is the question of what is humanity.
Oh, we're right back to that question. That's the reason we started with the game. That's a question. You're right on, Ted. This is the question. Is that avatar human? Then the question, the one that shut the conversation down on the net amongst our clergy and episcopacy was, can you consecrate the elements? Can virtual elements be consecrated? And can they be given? Is it possible to hold the Eucharist in cyberspace? Good question. All of them are good questions. Go back to over 20 million of us will be worshiping this way exclusively by the end of this year. And you can't avoid. Yeah, go ahead.
When you say 20 million will be worshiping this way, and when you first started off with this in Second Life, I had no idea, you know, what was going on. I mean, I thought that people were just, you know, getting out content, sermon, and discussing with one another, not creating a reality.
It's a reality.
Now you're talking about creating a reality, which is different than what I thought where you were going.
The United Methodist Church in England started this first. And about 3 years ago, they built what was called a Church of Fools. And it was just church. And Church of Fools, and Tony Campolo was the homilist. And UMC was aware that emergence Christianity was going, and that Christianity in general was going to the net and going into virtual reality. And they were trying to see what would happen if you just built a church there, not any of the Sim City or the second, you know, what would happen. And they finally had to shut it down. What would happen, it ran about 3 months before they shut it down. Tony was an avatar. It was Tony's voice. Tony was an avatar. He would get up and give the homily. All the people who checked in to hear the sermon, which is what you just said, picked up avatars and they sat in pews. And you could on your screen see, I watched it once, you could on your screen see the pews and you could see who was sitting where and all that kind of thing. And unlike the UCC, which was a little smarter, the Methodists didn't have guards. And Tony said something, I for the life of me cannot remember what he said, but he said something that offended one of the avatars. And the avatar attacked Tony's avatar, and a fight broke out. And the second time a fight broke out, the UMC pulled Church of Fools and didn't run it anymore. They say they're going to go back and try in order to counter the Second Life one, to try to, you know, get something that's just church. But they haven't solved it yet because of that very thing. And so what you've got, you've got a distressing kind of thing. Now, I will distress you more by saying that the UCC has really put a considerable more energy into the Isle of Quinoa and into that huge facility there. And I don't even know how many congregants they have, how many come and go all day long. But the UCC pastor who was most active in establishing Quinoa, and in seeing that the church interfaced with it real time to virtual time, is also a pastor in Atlanta of a UCC church. And last August, will be almost a year now, for the first time, and Kimberly, her name is Kimberly Knight, Kimberly wept when she told me, and I don't think Kimberly spends much time crying, but she says the most beautiful thing that had ever happened in her pastor. She took her people in Atlanta, and they connected to Second Life. And the people in Second Life connected to Atlanta. so that if you were an avatar in Second Life, you could see on the screen in the church on the Isle of Koinonia, you could see the real-time activity happening in Atlanta. If you were in Atlanta, you could see the Second Life on a screen in real in virtual time. And they worshiped together, alternating. Atlanta read the scripture. Second Life produced the music. Atlanta led the prayers. Second Life gave the sermon. And it was back and forth for over an hour, virtual and real. Okay? And she says, that's the way it's got to go. At some time and place, we've got to understand that we have to be able to connect with our congregants who are going to be virtually connected and not in real time with us. And I think she just may be right. How you produce that kind of worship service is your all's problem and not mine. I'm happy to say I'm not in worship studies, but there it is. There it is. And it has to be dealt with. And it does ultimately get back to the exact same question that you just said. Who are we? Are we real in Second? The room is so quiet.
Well,
this room would be so quiet. Yes.
Well, I mean,
I didn't catch that.
These are huge pastoral and parental problems.
They are.
My two sons were the top two people in the world on World of Warcraft, which was a huge problem for me. It cost both of them a year in college. They literally checked out of real life. That was a $30,000 price tag for my youngest son, who was getting free tuition. He flunked out a year.
Yes.
My son lost his first year of medical school, a Hebrew Jew. They also sold their accounts on eBay for way too much money. But I remember when we first faced this as a parent, trying to get my son, who had completely disengaged from his own friends, and he's very social. And I said, you have 1 hour on World of Warcraft, and of course he wouldn't get off, so I turned
to... You know what he's talking about?
It's a fantasy game.
Oh, SimCity.
It's all that stuff. So I went and turned as a parent, you know, I pay the bill, so I turned the modem off, I turned the electricity, the source off. He came out of his room at 15 years of age, furious with me, and was telling to me as a parent, he said, you didn't let me say goodbye to my friends. Now, my response generation, which is probably why I'm irrelevant, was those aren't your friends. Your real friends that you grew up are calling us saying, where's Brandon? He doesn't talk to us anymore. He had substituted a whole world of alternative friendships.
Horrible danger.
Yeah, I'm just sitting there going, I don't get this. I still don't get this. So, I mean, I hear everything you're saying, but we're working with a family right now, the grandchildren of one of our elders at our church. The mother and father are divorcing, and they're trying to get custody to the two little girls because the mother checked out of life and abandoned her husband and her children for World of Warcraft. You're talking a house that was cockroach ridden because she stopped doing dishes, house cleaning, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and they're in the courts over this right now. So all the things that you're talking about. And we're sitting here as pastors and elders saying, what do we do?
What do we do?
It's a whole new set of problems.
It can be an addiction.
Well, yes, it can.
It can absolutely be an addiction, can be a way to go.
I just find it incredible that we're using the same terminology that metaphysicals use, avatars. I mean, there is a spirit world, and they're there.
Right.
They're out there.
Right.
People are connecting into, and we're now accepting all of these names and beings.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
We're being so naive here.
Oh, it's a huge pastoral and parental problem. David just said it absolutely is, and you cannot talk about where Christianity is going, and you cannot talk about emergence without talking about the fact that there is this cyberspace component to it,
I don't know if any of you know Chris Brewer. You probably do.
Yeah.
Well, he and I went through the track together, and one of his earlier projects. He's the vice president of Brewer Christian College, which is an online college.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to have a project on developing an online chapel service for the school.
Yeah.
And I mean, the resistance in the class was overwhelming.
In the class?
In the class.
That's interesting.
Thinking, you can't have a community if we can't touch one another. I mean, and...
What age was the class?
Well, what's interesting, Chris was the youngest in the class, and I'm the oldest in the class. So everybody, you know, was in the 40s and 50s.
There you go. Okay.
And they just could not grasp it.
Yeah.
And one guy who's a Baptist pastor said, you know, why on earth would you have a Facebook page, you know? And he says, you can't have community online. And I said, well, probably I understand, Don, but you're just wrong. you just don't know about it.
That's right.
And so Chris actually has done that. You can go on brewerchristiancollege.com. Every week they have a new online chapel service, and they're really quite unique, and Chris is unique. Well, when he got to his dissertation, he said, I want to have an online communion service for all of the students all over the country that are students, because they're not here, they're all everywhere. And it stressed Dr. Borchert a great deal.
I can believe it would.
But
did he do it?
He did do it, and he did graduate.
Okay.
And he did do his research. It was tough finding research, but these are the sources he used.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just exhilarating what he was able to do, because he has a community of people all over the country, and some out of the country, that they're connected together. And they did have a communion service, and it was quite an unusual experience. But it was great.
I had one, thank you for that, because yes, it is exhilarating. And I had one priest say to me, yes, we do it quietly, we don't make a deal out of it, but it's the only way we can get our homebound to really. And one comes up to me quietly after a meeting and says, we're doing it. I'm sure there are a lot of others are also doing it. Probably for the same reason. It's the one way that the homebound can indeed go to church. But that obviously is not the whole reason it's going.
Well, no, he's got people in the military or in Iraq and, you know, I mean, all over. And you don't have to, and they don't even do it at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they are, it's many of their friends. Your friends are, yes. And texting also. Okay, enough of the sea. I told you I wanted to get that out of the way before we had to go to lunch. because you can go so far out there. One of the things I discovered 2 or 3 years ago when the Barna figures came out, and it was obvious we were going to have to talk about it, was that you can blow a whole lot of prior information by doing too much of this, because they think, oh boy, if she's out there fooling with this, is the other part credible? And so I learned to be very cautious with this, but it's also equally irresponsible to not talk about it because it's there and it's part of what's happening. Okay, it is lunchtime. When we come back, it is up to you guys, and all you have to do is to answer the question, where now is our authority, and to tell us who we are as human beings, and something about theology and religion, and then we can all go home.